I'm Grace Bonney of After the Jump, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more. Hi, you're listening to Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway, the host of Eat Your Words, that is. And I'm joined today for a special report with fellow host Nicole Taylor of Hot Grease, the podcast, and also known as the Food Culturist.
Thanks for having me, Kathy.
Totally. So this is a special episode, and we're exploring the conversations sparked in light of the publication of The Thug Kitchen, a cookbook that currently tops the New York Times bestseller list for the second week in a row for the cookbook category. And it's based on a blog that's been around since 2012 of the same name, Thug Kitchen. And we actually had the authors of this book come on Heritage Radio, interviewed by our own Sari Kamen a few weeks ago. This was right after the book was published. And in the weeks since, we have seen a lot more backlash regarding this book, so we thought we'd explore the topics from that a little bit more, just to give a few examples. They had a few publishing or book events scheduled in San Francisco and Seattle that got canceled because of threat of protesters at the events. So I don't know that the authors would have expected this, listening to that interview on Heritage Radio, that this was going to happen in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I think their heads may be kind of down in the sand, or maybe they're just choosing to ignore, you know, what people are saying about Thug Kitchen. I'm going to back up and really talk about 2012. When I first saw someone, like, I saw it on my Facebook feed, and I went on the Tumblr, and I was like, oh, okay. It's funny because everyone is, quote unquote, surprised that they're white. I always assume that, and I really don't think that that's really the conversation.
Right. So just to back up a little bit, some of the controversy started right when it was announced who the authors of this book was, because during the blog's life and up until the day it was published, because the cookbook has no author name on it, they were anonymous. So, Nicole, you suspected they're always white from
there on? Yeah, I suspected they were white. A few reasons why. Because they were getting mainstream press, you know, before their book came out. And they weren't in the quote-unquote black media. A lot of times when you see black cookbook authors or bloggers that are really huge and they've been talked about on Rachel Ray, or for them, Gwyneth Paltrow mentioned them on Goop, you would have saw them on The Root, or you would have saw them on Madame Noir, all these very popular online African-American focused media outlets. I didn't see them there. So I'm like, I think they're white. And I also felt like a few of their posts were a little forced, for lack of better words.
So, but they were definitely intentionally anonymous, and that's another thing in itself. But I don't know that, you know, just to be fair, Gwyneth Paltrow had, she wouldn't have known, like, in a lot of this media before it was announced their identities, they didn't know what they were. But you're saying that,
so
just
do you really actually think that people didn't know? I mean, come on, their publisher, I'm looking at an article here.
Well, their publisher knew. Well, yeah, they must have.
You know, Kathy, you've written a cookbook. You have another cookbook that's coming out. The publishing world is super small, and the food media world is super small as well, right? I mean, their article, their editor was interviewed by Publishers Weekly like last week. She did like four questions, like a Q&A. And she was like, yeah, it was our plan all along to remain anonymous. They created this whole marketing plan around this book launch and publicity prior to it coming out. So I'm going to have to believe that, yeah, big name media people, Rachel Ray, all these folks, they knew that they were white.
Hey, this is Jack, producer here. I think, if you guys don't mind, I just want to read one of the blog posts so people that aren't familiar at all with what we're talking about can get some context.
From Thug Kitchen.
Gotcha. Yeah, so this is one of the like earlier posts, I guess, from their blog. It's a picture of an avocado kind of split in half. And it says, "This shit here is no fucking joke. If today wasn't the last time you had one of these sons of bitches, then it's been too goddamn long, kid. Avocados are rich with not going to get that word, phytonutrients that reduce inflammation like sore muscles. Spread that shit on your next sandwich. Real talk, mayo is fucking gross. Nature's butter, bitch. So that's just like an idea of what this blog was and what the book became.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely also thought they were white. I also completely dismissed this book as a very shallow sort of gag when I saw it, or the blog concept as a whole. I mean, we see a lot of sort of shallow gags, for sure.
Yeah.
And also, that's a problem in itself, because I am someone who is very interested in healthy recipes that are practical for young people to make. So I didn't, when I saw this, that was totally lost on someone who might potentially be interested. And I just don't see, maybe I'm just not getting something. I don't see the genuineness. I don't see the passion. It's just overshadowed by this attitude. And it just comes across as very disingenuous to me.
I mean, Bryant Terry wrote a great article, CNN.com, as well as Michael Twitty, who's a culinary historian, independent culinary historian. And the word that keeps coming up, and the word that's actually been out for the last year, is this whole thing around cultural appropriation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is a fair assessment of Thug Kitchen.
Absolutely.
A lot of people want to make the whole conversation about the word thug, or they want to make the conversation about them being white. I don't think that is not even the story in this whole Thug Kitchen thing.
So do you think, Nicole, that this was very intentionally planned to be very, provocative, very sensational, and they intended on this controversy? When they came out and announced that they were white? Because in Brian Terry's article, he said that the fact that they were anonymous suggests that they knew something about the offense of...
Of course they
knew. Totally.
They're not dumb people. I mean, and let's not go, Kathy, you understand this, and people who are listening. This publishing world is not based on what you as an individual wants. Your publisher, or more so your marketing department, they run the shots. Mm-hmm. And this is really a conversation about food media. And what could a black person write this same cookbook or get this cookbook sold? They knew exactly what they were doing. They knew the folks behind them knew the controversy.
They masterminded it.
Of course. Of course. The marketing, this is what folks do in publishing and marketing. They study trends. They can tell you what words are sell the most. They can tell you all of these, where they need to market their book. So I think that this was a calculated push
for press.
Of course.
And I guess they know what they're doing, because it's sold out of the bookstores that we went to today. Yeah. And we're talking about it right now.
I think we should play maybe just the response that they had.
Yeah.
Just to...
On Heritage Radio, when Sari came and interviewed them on the morning after. Let's
hear
that.
And this is when Sari, the host, had brought up the controversy surrounding the book. And this is their response to that.
Well, I think everybody had kind of like an idea in their head. We get emails from people who are like, you know, I read this as like Jesse from Breaking Bad, you know.
So. I totally thought that about you last night. Right, yeah. I was like, oh, he's like the vegan Jesse Pinkman.
Right, yeah. So like, you know, it's like if you heard Calvin and Hobbes speak for the first time and their voices don't match the comics you've been reading for years, people are going to be like, oh, what the fuck, dude?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so I mean, we get it. We get it. We know, like, we're, like I said last night, we're painfully white. Like, we totally
helplessly,
understand.
Yeah.
Helplessly painfully white.
Yeah. But, you know, we... Like I said earlier, like, we curse on the site because we curse in real life.
Right.
And if you're actually reading the site, we're not pretending to have a lifestyle that we don't. Like, I talk about roommates, talk about going to potlucks. Like, it's not hard to imagine.
It's like you're cursing, but you're cursing about quinoa.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Come on. Are people really that surprised? I mean, I know that they are, because I read some of the tweets. And, like, honestly, some people were really upset. And
yeah.
I don't really want to give my opinion, but after listening to you guys talk last night, I realized, like, I don't think you're appropriating anyone else's language.
Well, I mean, we understand that thug is a loaded word. Like, we don't, again, we don't live in a cave. Like, and it's definitely gotten a lot more loaded in the past year and a half, which is, you know, well after we started the site.
No.
But we've always thought of it as more of an attitude. It's about taking control of your fucking diet and, you know, running shit in the kitchen. And that's how we've intended it.
Yeah. I mean, is there anything?
I just want to point out that they say we understood that thug was a loaded word.
And they said over the past year, meaning I'm going to assume when they say that they're talking about Michael Brown, they're right. talking about all these different things. And I'm using the word thug. Again, back to what I was saying before with Kathy, is that this was a masterminded thing. And it goes back to not only them, it goes back to food media and their publisher and the marketing folks. And really that, to me, this whole Thug Kid conversation is really about food media. And it's really about how when you see Brian Terry write an article or Michael Twitty or me talking about it today, we're not in the position to be able to do what the kitchen did with meaning curse and say, no, we can't do that there. I mean, and they can do that. And it's what you call, or what Michael Twitty said in his article, it's white's classic white privilege.
They're also coming out of absolutely nowhere. They're fresh newbies. Nobody's basically. They're not Rachel Ray. They're not even Gwyneth Paltrow. I don't even want to go there. But you know, listening to that article, I did get the sense that the authors, at least Megan, what was her name, Hollister, the one who was making the recipes, did feel like she wanted to create recipes to impact people in a positive way.
Okay,
she did
I can go with that.
But to me, this was all overshadowed by that attitude, the language. This was a language project, really. It's one of those shareable, very clip, you know, very buzzy memes that you would pass around. Yeah. It's like a postcard, basically.
But it didn't, as a person who like binge watched Breaking Bad, it did not sound like Jesse from Breaking Bad. I think that there were a lot of things that were referenced in their blog that were black culture or mm-hmm. black pop culture that you have to be deep into rap music or certain TV shows or movies to even understand it. I feel like it was thoroughly researched, or maybe they genuinely are really into black pop culture, pop culture in general. But to me, some of it felt like, oh my gosh, we need something to rhyme mm-hmm. with this or what have you. It wasn't Jesse from Breaking Bad.
I mean, even still, that's a character. I think that's a believable character. Whereas, you know, in Brian Terry's article explores this, the nucleus of the joke or like the whole concept here is the fact that, oh, would a kid who speaks like this really be cooking like this? So funny. Ha ha. You know, it's cultural appropriation. Absolutely. Even though they staunchly say that that's not what it is.
Look, Kathy, let me get, if I had been on Heritage for almost 4 or 5 years cursing like that, and saying, oh no, but I'm just, you know, I'm getting people to think about this. There's no way. I would have been totally snubbed. You can't.
I might still listen to you, Nicole.
No.
Yeah, I'll keep the show on.
People are already, you know, when I think about, you know, the Brian Terrys of the world, the Michael Twitties and other people that are all over the country that we don't know who are trying to break into this food media world. We don't have the luxury of being who we fully are. I mean, people want us to be one way, and there's no way we could be Thug Kitchen. And even beyond that, I just think that this just shows that privilege, just plain and simple.
Beyond that, for sure. Today, all the day I could think about was that Seattle Seahawks player, Richard Sherman.
Yeah.
And this is like aggressive sport. Yeah. You know, you're being paid to do something with a lot of aggression and testosterone involved in the sport. And, you know, just about a year ago, he had a mic put up to him by a reporter right after a very intense moment in a game. And he lashed out at an opponent during that game. And people called him all sorts of horrible things.
And he graduated from Stanford.
Yeah, so I couldn't stand that use of people. There was words like he has ghetto talk or something like that.
They called him a thug.
They did call him a thug. And you know what? He later said that thug is today's socially acceptable...
For nigga, yeah.
Yeah, N-word substitute. You know, language does change after a while, and I think that that's very fair. I'm not him. I've never been called a thug before, but I thought that was that.
And I want to raise a point really quickly about the word thug, because then in another point in that interview, they said, well, thug really to us means being a boss in the kitchen and like doing a good job. The word thug, as defined in the dictionary, is a cruel robber or murderer, a criminal. You know, like that. there's no mincing that. I don't see how that gets lost.
So, Jack, I mean, when people pick up the Thug Kitchen book, they're not thinking of criminal robbery. They're taking this as like an attitude, like a tough right. whatever. But yes, I mean, that's what it means.
Well, who's taking it as that? Some people are taking right. it as that. Everyone is not taking it.
The criminal kitchen? I don't know.
But I don't know if Jack is going to play that clip in that same interview with Thug Kitchen. I forget their names. I probably should say their names, right?
Matt Hollister and Meg. Oh, God. It doesn't even say on the book, so I'm sorry.
When the couple came in, I thought one of the most craziest part of the entire interview. They did a quiz at the end, and they were like, we're going to do a Thug California quiz with Tupac. That goes against everything that they were saying.
It was playing up to this whole manufactured, yeah. like, persona or and some performance people, piece. Really.
I will tell you that I was a bit offended by Tupac was a thug, and then they brought his mother's name up, and his mother had him
in jail. Why are we going here? Yeah.
It was just, it was too much. Mm-hmm. And it spoke to what everyone keeps talking to, that they're inappropriate. It's playing off Black culture to sell their book.
So where do we go from here? Because obviously a lot of people really enjoy this. They're flying off shelves. This is a big hit. People are passing it around. People love it. Where do we go from here in talking about race issues and also about food media? Can we have a quick little... or Jack, did you have something to say?
No, yeah. Well, I mean, I think maybe this is a good time to take a quick break. And then we'll come right back with that thought.
Yeah, moving forward. All right, we're back chatting with Nicole Taylor of Hot Grease, Jack Inslee, producer at Heritage Radio, and I'm Kathy Irway, host of Eat Your Words. So we're talking about Thug Kitchen.
We're talking about Thug Kitchen. And I had a thought over the break, Nicole. You mentioned that if a Black person wrote this book and tried to pitch it to a publisher, it would get rejected, right? You were saying there's no way.
Hands down.
Hands down. Mm. I wonder what... the response, let's say hypothetically it did come out, a Black author did write this book and a publisher accepted it, what would the response be from the Black community?
Let's talk about a few cookbooks that have come out that haven't been as harsh as Thug Kitchen. I think you have what's the rapper with the hair, Coolio. He had a book right. that came out. Mm-hmm. I don't think it sold a lot of books. 2 Chainz was doing something on his Instagram around food. I haven't heard anything from that.
Afro-vegan, Brian Terry.
I mean, Brian Terry is the star in terms of Black food ways, not even vegan food ways. Brian Terry is a star. He has 4 published books. I mean, besides Brian Terry, you have Jessica B. Harris. Those are the 2 Black people that are in food media writing books who have probably the most success than anyone. Also, I have to mention Adrian Miller. He won a James Beard Award. And you have a few other Black folks who've won Beard Awards. B. Smith, who's a legend. You know, she has Alzheimer's now, but she won a James Beard back in the 90s for books. She has a few books out. But this publishing world for African Americans is not an easy thing. Because we get boxed into a category. They want us to talk about a certain thing. They want us to have a certain title. Typically, it's around Southern food or soul food. So what would the Black community say? Probably nothing.
Well, I guess my point is, like, I feel like if a Black person actually tried to, like, make a light of, and a joke of that culture, there would be an outlash and say, like, you're missing.
We wouldn't. I think a smart black person, we know what we can and cannot do. And that's how I knew from the very beginning that there was no way. I mean, I'm generalizing and stereotyping here, but I mean, having conversations. And if you read Michael Twitty's article, he says that we have to conform. Either we don't get stuff published, period, point blank.
I want to give props to Nicole Taylor, who's coming out with a book.
Yeah.
Just got a publishing deal in 2016.
Really excited
very
about
exciting
that
exciting moment.
Countryman Press, which is an imprint of Norton. I'm going to be writing a book about my migration from south to north, and they were a publisher that were like, they said, you know what, we like the concept, don't change. But I had plenty of people who were like, can we get some fried chicken in there, can we?
You know, what would, I mean, I can't imagine. It's so beyond my imagination if this actually were a couple of black authors writing The Thug Kitchen. It's just, I can't even grasp. And just, what would the audience look like, too? One of my favorite points, I guess the main point in Brian Terry's article was that it's not funny that this is, or it's not surprising that black people would eat vegan food, or is somebody who has a sort of tough attitude, whatever, someone maybe a little inner city would eat food like this. This is traditional, you know, a lot of this is traditional peasant foods.
Yeah. I mean, if you know Jessica B. Harris, who has a show here on Heritage Radio Network, 12 cookbooks about black food ways all over the world. We know, and I can tell you growing up, we didn't eat meat. You only ate meat on Sundays. Beans, meat was a luxury. So the African-American, the black diet all over the diaspora is not one that's full of meat. It is one that's very rich in legumes and leafy greens.
Shout out to a documentary called Soul Food Junkies, which I think we saw and explored that topic.
So that's a whole nother conversation that people don't understand. Black food is not soul food. You don't eat soul food every day.
I don't get that a lot of people picking up this book, going through it, are learning anything about culture. The culture in here is totally phony. It's put upon. It's, I'm not the first to say it, but I'll say it. It's blackface. It's just phony. I don't think you get anything out of it. And the recipes, no matter whether they're good or not, I don't even know.
It's nicely designed.
It doesn't
designed.
Have to be good. It doesn't have to be like Chef Michael Anthony worthy dishes. Right. It's like, it doesn't have to be good, but it's just not,
My problem is that people think it's funny. And I wonder, Kathy, if you see this too, because I was telling Nicole earlier, I do. A lot of white people like acting, like putting on a black voice and making jokes, like amongst themselves. That's the thing I see all the time where they're like, yo, 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 dog, it's good to see you, my homie. And it's this thing that white people do. And I can't understand why in 2014 we're still here. Like, people laugh at that. Like, that's something funny or a punchline. That's not a punchline. That's not a joke.
I don't know. I'm from Jersey, so I don't know. This is just, this is kind of normal to me is what I meant. What was it? Where was I going to go with that one? But yeah,
the book is nicely designed. I'll give him that.
I really did have a point there. Shoot.
But Nicole, you've seen that. You've seen people do that in front of you.
Oh man, let me tell you. I moved to New York trying to make my way in this food world. I have stories. Do you hear me? I have stories of being, you know, the only black person in the room, or more so people coming up and their favorite question is, where's the best fried chicken? I'm not opposed to that, but when they go, girl, what's the best fried chicken? And I'm like, excuse me? And that is, it's offensive. It is very offensive.
It's like someone's looking at you and you're this caricature. And like,
yeah. And when you come, when you snap back at them, you know, what happens is you get labeled as being intense, or you get labeled as being, you know, she's a bitch or she's not nice, when you stand your ground. And that's what Brian Terry did. That's what a lot of The Root, Michael Twitty, other folks basically said, no, we don't like this.
Now, I'm certainly not naive enough to think that everyone who's writing today needs to be a total angel or have this very clean, pure, genuine persona without any sort of swag or a little bit of screen persona. I get that. But this book is so emblematic of the fact that a lot of books or media things, shows, what have you, blogs, have a really strong just gimmick to it. And that's really, going back to the beginning of our argument, all the cookbooks, I see a lot of cookbooks that get pitched by my way, and it's a lot of gimmicks. I mean, and sometimes they just don't seem like they're real, like they're coming out of a real opinion, and it's very forced upon.
I agree. You see a lot of books that are very, well, or more so where someone has put problem. You know, together, like, oh my gosh, this is what you'll say. You're not really from the South, but you know, you were raised there, and they come up with this whole like great story about being a Southerner, and they write this great Southern book. Or, you know, someone talking about, oh, I'm from the West Coast and California cuisine. It's this whole thing. You don't see a lot of authentic people anymore in terms of folks online. But it's because it's the online culture.
I'm glad people are calling this one out, because it seems that this is, for the most part, very accepted, this book and this blog. And I want to bring up an example of a pretty similar concept, at least in style. It was called This Is Why You're Fat. Started as a Tumblr blog. It wasn't no writing whatsoever. It was just picture after picture of things like chili cheese fries.
Wow, that sounds good.
It was funny. I mean, but it was like provocative, meaning like you can take this as a piece of, you know, like art. You can make whatever the heck you want out of it. Like, we're not going to tell you what to think.
Did they publish a book?
They did publish a book, and Richard Blakely and Jessica Emerson were the authors, but they're mostly the curators of these photos. They got so much critical backlash from basic people saying that's offensive. And it's food. It's pictures of chili cheese fries.
So are they now? Is their Tumblr still around?
Into the ethers.
So what do you think is going to happen to Thug Kitchen? I don't think it's gonna last.
They can't have any legs. I mean, they don't have enough of a resume to do anything else. I don't think.
Well, Brooklyn Lauder, which I follow them, they're like a cookbook, all cookbook bookstore. They're what, in Seattle?
Seattle. That's the one that just canceled their event.
Yeah, they canceled their event. Because when I saw on their list, I'm like, oh, they're so progressive. I think so highly of them.
I think they got threatened by just an angry mob.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why they canceled.
Well, good for them. I mean, you got to stand up for something. If it feels wrong, and you know, say something. You know what I'm saying? Say something and say, you know what? I don't like this. Instead of just saying, oh yeah, this is funny, and let it float around. It's like Auntie Fee, the woman, the older black woman that's all on YouTube that's cursing. And you haven't seen it, have
no.
You? Jack, have you seen it?
I gotta see Auntie Fee.
No, I meant to pull it up though.
Oh, okay. So it's an older black woman. She's cooking in the kitchen, and she's cursing. And it's like somebody in her family has just taken the video. I hate it. I don't like it. And like two or three people, a friend sent it to me recently. And she was like, I was like, yeah, I've seen that. I really don't want to see it again. I said, she was like, why? I said, because I know the struggle of people trying to get books sold, trying to get TV shows, trying to do very basic things. And the Auntie Fee plays into this whole stereotype of they want black people to be like, yeah, girl, cursing it to a stereotype or a one-dimensional black character. So I think when you see stuff like that, or Thug Kitchen or anything else, say something like, you know what, this is offensive.
And certainly it seems like, I don't know, even from that sound clip, they were trying to walk around this line of like, it's really not about us. It's about the food, or I don't really know what.
But they didn't talk. They didn't talk about the food. No. The entire interview.
Right.
Tell me, name me three recipes they talked about, or how their book is broken down. Did they talk about that in the interview?
It was more about the project of doing this, you know, rather than their boring day jobs.
Who does press and they don't talk at least about one of their dishes or something? You interview nothing but cookbook authors.
Yeah, we talk about food. True.
Aren't buying it for the recipes, though. That's the thing. It's more of, a coffee table book and like a joke book.
However, I did get pitched a couple of years ago a book called The Vegan Stoner Cookbook. And it was not up my alley personally, but I could see that there was a certain counterculture that really identified with being a vegan and a stoner. And I could I get that. And that's probably what the author was all about. I don't get that this has anything to do with them, their personalities. And usually that's what you should share when you come out with a cookbook. And she mentioned that, yeah, I talk about my potlucks and this is totally me. I just don't see that. I don't know.
That's not their marketing plan. That is not their marketing plan to talk about their potlucks.
I mean, the word thug kitchen is just problematic in a lot of ways. I could maybe dismiss, like, the expletives throughout the recipes. You know, stir this fucking five-spice fried rice with sweet potato. Like, fine. But I don't know. What do you think about... What is the most offensive part about this? Because for me, the title...
Also, for you, is the title. The most offensive part is knowing that there was an entire team behind this mastermind. Mm-hmm. That is the offense. It's not the title. It's not the cursing in the inside. It's the most offensive is that a book like this can actually go through a publishing company. They can get a marketing a whole marketing plan behind them. You have a whole article with their publisher talking about what their plan was and their book trailer and their numbers. That is the most offensive.
That's the most fucked up thing. Where do we go from here? Because you guys hypothesize that they have no future, but this formula seems to have a future, right?
I wouldn't be surprised to see something else like it come out.
I don't think so. I don't. Again, I stated earlier, you asked me about other, you know, folks who have attempted to do something that's a little edgy. I know one of these articles mentioned Bitchin' Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she had a show or whatever. But I think, you know, there's a very fine line of
between performance-y
and being edgy and being like, you know, just being not real, inauthentic. I don't think that where do we go from here? I don't think we'll see this genre grow. There's no way.
We've seen it in different ways throughout the years. It's cultural appropriation, exploitation of a certain type, something to jump on and exploit, basically. And I think we'll see it in many different ways, but...
I think the reason why we won't see it, I mean, you look at pop music right now. There's a huge conversation going on with pop music with Iggy Azalea and Miley Cyrus and... But as soon as they do something, if they get on an award show, Black Twitter goes crazy on them. Mm-hmm. I think social media will not allow this genre to succeed. There's
no
way.
Social media is what provoked probably a lot of people who protested those bookstore events. And that's something I haven't
seen
in a while.
And I think social media probably was a catalyst to some of these folks, bookstores canceling the events.
Yeah. I haven't heard of that. Have you?
I mean, I haven't gone on their page. I need to go on their Facebook page. It would be very interesting to see if people are going on there saying stuff. And if they're... My thing is, why can't they respond to it? You don't see a response from them. To me, again, I think their team has basically said, don't respond.
Right.
If you could ask them something, Nicole, what would you ask the authors?
Oh, that's a good question. What would I ask them?
Say they're on hot grease right now.
Well, they wouldn't be on high grease, let's say that. That is a very good question. I think, you know what I would ask them? I would ask them what kind of books are on their bookshelves and not just cookbooks. I want to know whether they read. How smart are they? Besides, I know obviously they listen to rap music or research it, but I want to know what they read. What do you read? What are your magazines? Just to see.
Mm-hmm.
Are you really a truly genuine and understand culture besides your little Hollywood white culture and your potlucks? So that's the question I would ask them. What do you read?
And if you could tell something to the publishers or the marketing whizzes or powers that be manufacturing mayhem, what would you say?
Well, they wouldn't listen to me, but what I would say to the publisher people, and I'm like, really? You know, I would first give them a list. I would give them a list of people who are doing really awesome things in terms of writing or blogging that really deserve a cookbook. My friend Sonar Weathers, the last 4 years, during the month of December, she does this thing called Kwanzaa Culinarians. All these bloggers, black bloggers or bloggers of color, they submit recipes. She does it online. It needs to be a book.
That's cool.
I would give... the marketing folks, the publisher, a list of 10 people I think that needs to get a book published.
Kwanzaa Cookbook? I gotta check
Kwanzaa
that out.
Kwanzaa Culinaries,
Kwanzaa Culinaries. Very cool shit.
I had one more hypothetical, and I mean, this is just something that's been in my head the whole time. Like, Kathy would be a great example if, like, you or Nicole, if either one of you wrote a cookbook called The Yenta Cookbook, and it was all full of Yiddish slang. Can we imagine what, like, that A would never get published?
That's cultural appropriation.
Right, exactly. So,
yeah, I mean, why is it okay for white kids to sound like a Wicker or whatever you want to call it? And it's totally not. It would be crazy for me to get up there and be a Yenta or cookbook writer.
It would be
writer.
Outlandish. Like, no one would even. There would be an outrage.
The problem I see even more is that even if a black kid from the streets wrote this book, like you were saying, Nicole, I don't think he would go anywhere. I mean, I think
he would self-publish.
He could self-publish, and then I think people would get angry at him, just like they did with Richard Sherman. You know, just like,
I mean, you know, if a kid is that smart to be able to do that, they would know what line they could cross and couldn't cross. I mean, you know this, to sell books, and I've heard Brian Terry say it, he would not be successful if it wasn't for middle-aged white women. That's they buy cookbooks.
They buy cookbooks, sure, yeah. Well, they're not buying. I don't know if they're buying this one. I don't know who's buying this one.
Well, the marketing people know.
Yeah. People who eat like you give a fuck, which is so. I don't know. Okay. I don't know.
We came up with some solutions, though, Kathy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I loved highlighting. Let's highlight more of those heroes.
Or people who are just like me and you that are just, you know, really passionate about food.
Hey. And I, you know what? That's something that lasts. That's yeah. something that has a long career. People who are doing something genuine, like Brian Terry, like you, like
it's
not
20
gonna,
more people
not
I can
a one
name.
Hit wonder,
right? There are 20 people so I can you. Name. It's you know, the Brian. There are a million Brian Terrys of the world. I'm trying to be like Brian mm-hmm. Terry. There are a million other Jessica Harrises of the world. But you know,
people recognize
they're not
right
in the
after
kitchen.
A while. Whereas tomorrow in another year, 2 years, I don't know when, we're going to forget this one-hit wonder.
And I would say if you're a foodie and you're getting into a food blog or a food book, make sure that the person has a resume to back up writing or talking about food in some way. I mean, like you said, these people came out of like nowhere.
Yeah, that is a good question. They did come out of nowhere. She said she worked at a grocery store.
I mean, I work with a lot of bloggers and I just say, just pick something that you're definitely genuinely passionate about. Not right. something that is... cool obsession right now and you're gonna not have it afterwards.
You can't write a ramen book without going to Japan, you know. I mean, I just think that's a part of this too.
And I do feel bad if they do have that genuine interest in vegan in food and I don't know, things got out of hand, they were pushed into this strange position that they find themselves in today, but we are offended. We are genuinely
hey look
offended.
I mean, you know, people of color and white allies that are coming out and saying I'm offended, and I've seen a lot of that on social, from my personal Facebook to social media. People are saying, look, I don't like this, I'm offended. And I think that is like the step in the right direction of people like saying mm-hmm. I don't like this, it makes me uncomfortable, I don't know why I don't like it, but this is just, it's just something about it. Otherwise we just let it go on, and if we don't say anything.
And I think that they're having that taste of reality right now with all the cancellations, so we'll see where this goes from here. And thank you so much for all your time,
thanks for having
Nicole.
Me. Thanks for having me on. I hope we made some sense.
I know. And I hope we do this again sometime.
Yeah, no.
This was fun. Thanks, Jack.
Thanks for letting me chime in. I haven't been shutting up about this for a few weeks. So.
I'm so glad we got to do this. So, yeah, definitely check out Hot Grease. And I'll hear from you on, or you'll hear from me on Eat Your Words.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.